back with the Barologist on Radio 3CR. A summit on leadership, art and disability, driving changes from afar.
Good afternoon and welcome to Back with the Barologist, a series on disability, art and leadership. On today's show, I am talking with Carolyn Bowditch, CEO of Arts Access Victoria. Welcome to the show, Carolyn.
Thanks, Raphael. It's really great to be with you.
Now, what does art, disability and leadership mean to you?
Wow, that's a big question to start with, Raph. What does it mean? I think as a disabled person, art's always been really important to me, and I think one of the really key things that is something that's still developing is a sense around authentic leadership and about us as disabled people leading arts and disability or disability-type organisations, because we are the ones with the first-hand experience of what it is to live in the world. So I feel like we're the most relevant people to represent ourselves.
Well, is it Stella Young? I'm going to attribute this quote to Stella Young. Nothing about us without us.
Mm-hmm.
Sound familiar?
Yeah, it's really familiar. And actually it's a quote that came from the disability movement in the UK. And it absolutely is where Arts Access Victoria has always sat and where I kind of sit politically as well, is I would much rather us be at the table, involved in the conversations, even leading the conversations, preferably, rather than us as a group being spoken about as an anthropological group to be served or serviced by others.
Yep, now we're going to actually visit that a little bit in detail a little bit later on, Carolyn. But mm-hmm. You've mentioned Arts Access Victoria. What actually is Arts Access Victoria?
So Arts Access Victoria, or AAV, as I may refer to it, is an arts and disability organisation, and we've been in existence for 45 years. And we work alongside disabled artists to support their artistic development, their practices, to provide spaces where people can connect with art maybe for the first time, anything. I suppose we also, I would say, do a lot of sector development, so a lot of working with the mainstream industry to bring them up to speed about the importance of authentic voices being represented on our stages and screens and throughout our galleries. So we kind of, on one side, work with artists. We also work with the sector, the arts sector, and then I suppose also we do some work around questioning the art form or trying to extend the aesthetic and highlighting the importance of the kind of disability aesthetic, I suppose, or the access aesthetic, and extending that further.
Right. Now, you're talking about working with artists with a disability and mainstream art sector and engaging with people, again, that sounds very much similar to the practice of Rachel Gadsden about engaging with everybody, so it's not exclusive to one particular field. Now, as far as leadership goes, how does Arts Access Victoria go about trying to engage with the mainstream arts community as far as leadership goes?
Yeah, another great question, Raph. I think one of our strongest engagement, well, there's many levels that it happens on, I would say. One is we have a really great relationship with the state minister, so with Martin Foley, who's got the arts portfolio, and we have a great relationship with Martin. I sit on the Creative Industries Advisory Group, which is made up of 20 people who are advising the government at the moment on developing the next arts policy, so the Creative State 2 document. We also run a program currently which is called ADAPT, which is about mainstream arts organisations developing their disability action plans. And that's been a really important kind of keystone event for us to be able to link in and really develop relationships more strongly with arts organisations that we potentially haven't worked so closely with in the past. And then we've got over 200 partnerships that we that have been really long-term, and a lot of them are with local councils as well as mainstream arts organisations. So we work with the industry in lots of ways, and we lead a lot of those conversations. We involve and invite people in to have those conversations with us.
Right. Now, at a, let's say, an disability artist level, what are the types of programs that Arts Access Victoria has that some of the ones that do readily spring to mind are the Nexus program, there's the artist engagement and network meetings. Would you like to tell us, can you tell us a bit more about those to start with?
Sure. So the Nexus program is primarily offered to younger people, and it really is a professional development 8-week training course for disabled artists to come together to share practice, to meet industry representatives, to learn more about how to write funding applications, work out or hear more about opportunities that exist in the mainstream, and also just to create a bit of a network amongst themselves to potentially form collaborations for future work together. Artist engagement is obviously our artist development kind of area, and as you mentioned, one of the big things that we've been running this year is the artist networking sessions, which happen once a month on a Thursday, and they are growing in popularity every month. And I've actually just in conversation with the other, our sister organisations, as it were, the AAV equivalents in other states, extended an invitation to disabled artists that might be located in other parts of Australia that might want to Zoom in, because obviously one of the things that we offer as part of that networking is not just face-to-face contact, but also virtual connection, so that people can access those networking opportunities wherever they are, in a way that's the most comfortable to them.
Well, let's actually define what actually Zooming means. My understanding of Zooming is that is where a person can link into an organisation's conference or workshop, training or performance, where they could do it through the comfort of their own home?
That's absolutely it, Raph. So what we do is we give people what's called a Zoom invite. So it's a way for them to literally be in the room with us, but wherever they are. So long as they've got access to the internet and a computer, potentially with a camera, but that's not essential. But so long as they've got an internet link, they can link in to whatever meeting or event we might be holding here at AAV from wherever they are in the world. And they can contribute as easily as having a phone conversation, but it can be done face-to-face, as it were, virtually.
Okay, now from a leadership perspective in arts, now because of the Zooming technology, is this a way that performances by artists with a disability and other artists could make this more accessible to people with a disability?
Yeah, potentially. I mean, I think it's mostly being done in a kind of talking sense, so in like event type things. I'm not sure how much it's being used in terms of performance, but I know that some people now are using things like Facebook Live to be able to bring people almost effectively into the room for performances. And I think there's lots of options that could be explored into the future.
Well, is it regarding arts and leadership and disability that kind of like the way which I envision on how to make entertainment and creativity and art more accessible for people with a disability would be to actually have more of the performance itself, the director does, can actually utilise technology so the person, people with a disability can actually interact and participate and be an actual live member of an audience, because that reduces things such as the isolation. It makes it more accessible. It does away with the problems, possible problems with, let's say, travel, and it's the person stays in the comfort of their own home.
Yep, completely. You're absolutely right. I think technology has got a lot to offer us into the future, and one of the things that we've been talking a lot about here at AAV is the fact that the digital space is one that is possibly the most accessible for lots of us.
Okay, now my name's Rafael Caleb and I'm talking with Carolyn Bowditch, CEO of ArtsX Victoria. And ironically, we were talking about the role of technology in the future when we had a technical hitch here as far as making sure that people are all happy and content so we have accessible art. Let's revisit this little scenario of organisations and, let's say, using Facebook Live, for example, to engage with audiences.
Yep.
Right. Okay. You go.
So Facebook Live isn't something that we're using so much, but one of the things that we use a lot for a lot of our meetings to allow people to join from wherever they are, in the country, in the state, in the city, which is called Zoom. So basically people are sent a Zoom invite, and so long as people have got an internet connection, they can join whatever meeting, whatever public meeting is happening here, and also we've been using that in other places. So lots of our events that have happened this year have been live streamed as well, so there's been a link that's been available either during the event or post the event. And for a panel that we did for Melbourne International Film Festival earlier this year, we know that 1,200 people joined that live feed as it was happening. So we know that it's incredibly popular and that it's opening up doors for lots of people that can't physically get to the venue.
Right. What, like, there was also live streaming of the 2019 Stellar Young Award.
There was, yeah. So because the Stellar Young Award is national, we were able to not just Zoom people in to be in the room with us, but we were also able to Zoom last year's winner, Madeline Little, into that room. To talk about the impact that winning the award has had on her.
Well, it's actually had an incredible impact. I remember Madeline did speak about how it had opened up a lot of doors for her. We do have an interview with Madeline Little for this series, Back with the Barologist.
Great.
And one couple of the other people, when it comes down to, what role did Stellar Young play in really developing leadership within the disability arts community and leadership everywhere?
Yeah, I think what Stell did was she really became a very strong and powerful voice in a disability space, or actually a strong and powerful disability voice within a mainstream space. I think the role that she held with the ABC and the fact that she was the editor of Ramp Up and the work that they did online, and that she had a presence, she had a a kind of following. She was very well known throughout the community and throughout the country, and I think she really shifted people's thinking about disability and opened up a whole lot of new conversations that hadn't been had before. And she did so much of it with incredible wit, intelligence and humour, and I think that really allowed so many people in that hadn't felt comfortable or confident in that space before.
Right, well, I guess as far as, let's say, disability art and leadership goes, that there was a film called Defiant Lives, directed by Sarah Barton.
Yes.
Now, is this actually maybe the future of where leadership art and disability does go through that wing, that art is used to educate people about what people with disability do, the people's lives, and making art that is of extremely high standards in order to influence others?
Completely. I mean, I think, Raf, you and I know that art can be transformational in people's lives, and I also think that as artists, we almost have a social responsibility to tell our story, to get that across, and art is such an incredible medium to allow that to happen and allows that to be open to an audience, maybe that, I suppose, an audience en masse more than trying to have those individual conversations with people, but actually you can have hundreds of people in a space and be sharing a story or giving them insight or just being there. Often just by having a physical presence on stage and identifying as having a disability or it being visible to people is a political act and can really shift people's thinking. Because I think it sometimes can really challenge people's expectations of disabled people. I think often the expectations placed on us are much less than we are capable of, which is where we get into the inspiration porn kind of scenario, which Stell also coined the phrase of. But I think, it gives us a kind of platform to have a voice, have an authentic voice to tell our stories the way we want to tell them, because we know that there's a lot of people in the world that will tell our story for us, not necessarily in the way that we want it to be told.
Okay, well, with telling stories, let's talk about Disability Pride is Back, the art mural in Footscray, about claiming people's space. What are your thoughts about this sort of artwork?
I think Larissa McFarlane's work, the Disability Pride mural, is so important and so rare. It's I think disability pride is still a quite unknown kind of thought for lots of the disability community. We haven't necessarily had a lot of pride. I think what Larissa has done in the mural is really put it in a very public space. Again, it's this thing about putting it in the public domain to kind of make the voice heard, to make our presence felt, to and do it in a way that's unapologetic and that actually is proud. We're proud disabled people, and we're not, disability is part of our identity, and it's not something that we want to apologise for, but is part, a really crucial and important part of who we are.
Right, now we've just got a couple of minutes left, Carolyn. Is it now? Yeah, you've been up at Meeting Place in Canberra talking about art.
Yeah,
can you tell us about that Meeting Place?
Sure. So Meeting Place is an annual event that is coordinated by Arts Access Australia. So it's the national body that kind of umbrella organisation that I suppose works across the whole country, and all of the sister organisations are members of it, and lots of other people are members of it. And Meeting Place is an annual opportunity, I suppose, for people with an interest in arts and disability, including disabled artists, to come together to share thoughts, ideas, practice, see work, engage in dialogue, and just to really think about what needs to happen next. So one of the conversations that I was involved in was, what does the future hold? What does it look like? What do we need moving forward? And I think one of the really exciting things that happened last week at Meeting Place was that the outcome of a research project that Arts Access Victoria has been involved in for the last 3 years, called The Last Avant-Garde, was launched. And this new website is sort of a snapshot of Australia in relation to arts and disability or disabled artists at the moment, in that it includes disabled artist profiles, along with findings from the research, and also some really clear statements about what the researchers feel need to happen next in order for us to really shift forward in an exponential kind of rate.
Right. Now, are there any details about the next Meeting Place for 2020 available yet?
Yeah. So the next Meeting Place will happen in Brisbane in collaboration with a festival which is called the Undercover Artist Festival. And it will happen sometime in September. We're still not sure of the dates completely, but it'll happen in September next year in Brisbane.
Right. Well, that's something for listeners to keep an eye out, and we'll try to revisit that. Now, the last question, general question I've got for you, Carolyn. Now, recently, the Australian federal government had an unusual position in regarding the disbanding arts funding, or I should say the Minister for Arts is no longer non-existent, or it's been... Okay, any thoughts on this one?
I mean, because that came out, obviously, while we're at Meeting Place, well, in the days that followed Meeting Place, the absorption of the Department of Arts not being a standalone thing anymore, but actually being absorbed into within other groups. And there is a real fear about the focus on the arts will be lost in that space. It's really early days at this stage to kind of feel the impact of that, but I think what it does send a fairly clear message to the arts community in Australia is just how how unfocused the government is on really valuing the arts, I suppose. It's a bit of watch this space, Raph.
Well, personally, is that my take on this one? I don't think it forebodes well for the arts community. I think this is actually a forerunner of possibly the federal government really slashing funding, which has already happened from the federal budget to fund the important arts programs. That's where I think that would be the next step, which I think the government is looking at.
Yeah, and we already know that in the next round of Australia Council funding, which is also undergoing lots of changes at the moment, that there could be kind of up to 25 organisations that lose their funding out of a pool of 160 across the country. That's a fairly
about one in seven
chunk. So that's a fairly significant loss for the industry and also for the community.
Yeah, well, this is certainly food for thought. Now, the last question for you, Carolyn, is how do people get in contact with Arts Access Victoria?
So you can check out our website, which is www.artsaccess.com.au, and you can look at all the programs that we run and lots of ways to get involved in any of our activities that are coming up. You can also email us at info@artsaccess.com.au, and someone will get back to you if you send an email to that email address, or you can call us on 96998299.
Okay, thank you very much for your time, Carolyn. We wish you well we wish Arts Access Victoria well for the rest of this year, season's greetings, and for next year and beyond too.
Thanks so much, Raph, and to you.
Thank you very much. My name's Raphael Caleb. I've been talking with Carolyn Bowditch,
CEO of Arts Access Victoria. Thank you very much for your time. It's now, we've been talking about arts, disability and leadership. I'd like to thank very much Stella Barton, who's been undergoing some training with Sign Radio, talking about disability media. Thank you very much for your time, Stella. Much appreciated. My name is Rafael Caleb, and this is Back with the Barologist, talking leadership, art and disability. And right now on the line, all the way from England, I have Rachel Gadsting, an international artist. Welcome to Back with the Barologist, Rachel.
Hello, it's really great to be reconnecting with you again in Melbourne, and to be communicating with all my friends in Australia and beyond. It's great to be back in touch again.
Well, thank you very much, Rachel. Is that where I met Rachel? I came in contact with Rachel at Arts Access Victoria when she was out in Australia doing a talk at an artist engagement and network meeting. Now, what did you think of the artist engagement and network meeting, Rachel?
Well, I thought it was absolutely fantastic. It's always really good to have the opportunity to meet up with disabled artists. I'm a disabled artist, and I'm always intrigued to find out what work people are creating around the world. And I think what I found most exciting was that we were sort of coming together as one voice, and that we have very similar passions and concerns and activism about trying to make the world a slightly more accessible and better place through disability art.
Well, that's right. Is that there was a number of things. I'd like to actually revisit a couple of the points that you made at your talk. And one of them, you talked about cross-cultural diversity. Now, what does that actually mean?
I've always been interested that obviously we live and we work in our home places or our hometowns, but you know, to have any impact, you really need to have a cross-cultural conversation, and that can be a cross-cultural conversation in your own community or a much bigger international cross-cultural conversation. And I think it's through those conversations that we have the chance of really bringing the sort of changes that the UN and many other authorities and governments around the world really want to make as far as individuals who have disabilities or are deaf, and wanting to sort of make the world a much more inclusive place. And through culture, we're actually able to have quite a big voice. And so that's something that concerns me greatly.
Now, so regarding the cross-cultural, is that to me is one of the things that you mentioned, that when making art, that your intended audience was both mainstream and a diverse audience, to find a theme which everyone could really connect with that would make a social change or difference?
That's right. I always obviously come back to the mainstream environment. I work across both mainstream and disability sectors. And to be quite honest, you know, as a disabled person, or if I was deaf, I do actually wear hearing aids as well, but if I was somebody who was deaf, I think we tend not to ever really think about ourselves as disabled people. Of course we are, but we're actually just humans. And the action of actually saying I'm disabled is very much about trying to find roots where the bigger society can feel that disabled people can act on the same level playing field and can be seen as equal within the society. Unfortunately, that isn't yet the case. I live in London. It's a very multicultural, diverse community, but there are still huge challenges for disabled people. And then beyond London and into many countries that I visited around the world, disabled people are really seen as massive outsiders. And so the whole issue around constantly reconnecting with the mainstream is because we don't have to persuade disabled people who we are. It's actually trying to embed the whole notion that disabled people are the same as everybody else within the bigger society. So we have to have that cross-cultural, multicultural conversations.
Look, it said, I agree too. We're going to revisit that a little bit in depth in a few minutes, but because we're talking about equality. Now, one of the really key points that came across with the discussion that we had at Arts Exit Victoria, the Artist Engagement and Network meetings, was that with Jeremy Hawkes, who was the recipient of a Create New South Wales grant, that he approached you to mentor him, and you had something rather interesting to say about working together?
That's right. He approached me, I think it was probably just under a year ago. He was going to go for this fantastic grant that had become available for the first time for professional active artists in Australia. And there was a section of the application that very specifically said that the artist who was applying had to find somebody, I think internationally, to be their mentor. And Jeremy reached out to me and said he'd heard about my work and would I possibly be interested in being his mentor? And to be quite honest, it felt rather surreal, really, because I don't tend to see myself as a mentor. I'm a collaborator. And I knew that whatever I could give to Jeremy as an artist or whatever exchanges we had, he would be able to offer the same sort of exchanges to me. So when I had to write the letter to say that I was very excited about his work and wanted to very much be part of this grant application, instead of saying I was going to be the mentor, I said, I'm a collaborator. And that's the only role I want to have. And we were very lucky, or Jeremy was very lucky and was successful with his application. And so we will be collaborating together in 2020. So that's not far away now. I'm very exciting for both of us.
Well, it certainly is very exciting. And one of the reason that point actually, it struck a chord with me, that the key to me was collaborating with someone where people are actually equal, where it's a mutual learning experience for everyone.
Yes.
Now,
it is.
Now, from a leadership perspective in arts and disability, with leadership, arts and disability, why would it be a lot more important for people to use the term collaborate instead of actually having a structured leadership with a hierarchy?
Well, I suppose it just echoes for me the same things about, you know, mainstream and disability. Why are they separate? Why is there the mainstream sector and the disability sector? The only reason the disability sector still exists is because it has to exist until there's a level playing field. As far as being a mentor is concerned, and with an artistic practice, I don't think there needs to be that structure because we're artists. There's nothing that separates us. The only thing that separates Jeremy and I may well be age. I'm not sure whether I'm older than him, but possibly I may have more experience. But for me, whether you're a very skilled artist or a beginner, we all bring something to the table. So for me, we all have to sit there as equals around the table. And I've learned just as much from working with Syrian refugee collaborators who have never picked up a paintbrush in their lives, refugees around the world. It makes no difference to me. If we're being creative, we're all offering something. And so in an ideal world, we wouldn't have any of these separations, but obviously they exist partly to please funders, I think, sometimes. But I do call myself a disabled artist because until there's an equal playing field, I have to have the role of disability within my title and structure. It's sort of making a political statement, really. But of course, I am disabled as well, and I'm not afraid or embarrassed about being disabled. It is just who I am.
Yes, and look, and I certainly understand that too, about the flat structure, about taking ownership of having a disability. In Australia, there is someone called Larissa McFarlane who took the concept when Disability Pride Is Back went up in Footscray in 18, that was very much a collaboration of disability activists and advocates into the mainstream culture, where it was public domain of an artwork of reclaiming the space of saying to the community, people with a disability do belong in the community and have got a lot to contribute?
It's a very, very, very important statement. And I, since I've been, since I came to Australia, I've connected with Larissa, and I admire her work enormously. And I think the disability pride work is essential for part of the bigger picture of trying to bring the cultural change. It's very difficult because the role of disability is difficult, but I think disability and identity and the issues all around pride identity is very, very important, because it's completely left out of the picture for most people, because most people don't even consider individuals who are disabled that they should in any way have relationships or be considering their own disability and of their own identity in account of their being disabled in the first place. So I think the work that's been going on with Disability Pride in Australia, and particularly in Victoria, is really, really essential. It's quite groundbreaking work.
Well, as said, with groundbreaking work, that one of the concepts which I've pitched to a few people as far as the mainstream and disability community working together with art was really along the lines of that as an artist who does have a disability, that for myself, I found that my experience is that I cannot actually change organisations about how they include or disclude or exclude people with a disability. But part of my overall object is to have a disability arts practice that is so appealing to the mainstream community that the mainstream community would like to join a disability arts movement and merges one that way, rather than try to break traditional stereotypes.
I think your approach is incredibly wise, because I think that any other approach just alienates further and further. I always find it quite remarkable, because if any of us are lucky enough to live to very grand ages, we're all going to have some form of disability or other. But we have this innate fear as humans of someday either becoming disabled or being disabled. And I think it's that sort of inner fear that stops people really wanting to address anything to do with disability. And I think you're very wise, and it's a very intelligent approach to sort of almost welcome people to be part of conversations that are inclusive and that people feel that they can be part of. So it's probably the approach that I would take. I think sometimes maybe there is a little bit more of an activist in me that means that I want to challenge some of the stereotypes. But I do that through artworks, and on the whole, my artwork isn't aggressive. So I think probably I'm probably taking a similar approach to you most of the time.
Right, because let's say, what would you do, Rachel, if an organisation comes out of nowhere and says, look, we would like to engage Rachel Gadsden, international artist, to work with our community. What are some of the questions that you go through your mind before maybe looking at what they've got in mind?
One of the first things I have to deal with now is if I'm traveling internationally, I can't travel independently because of my disabilities. So right at the very start, I have to find out what provision is in place to enable me to also travel with somebody else. So disability is one of the first conversations that happens. And sometimes in the past, I found that extremely debilitating, because I think, well, I'm an artist, I should be talking about my artwork. But as time's gone by, I began to realise that actually I need to have those disability conversations, because I'm in a position where I can, where I get some really very major commissions. And if I have those conversations, I know that any other artist who may have the opportunity to have a similar commission in the future may not have to have such difficult and often aggressive conversations just to do with being a disabled person. So although I don't think it's critical to the actual artwork I make, I think it's critical to the notions of how a mainstream organisation proposes their commissions, so they can consider how open they can be and inclusive they can be about welcoming anybody to be part of a similar commission in the future.
Yeah, but look, is it one of the things that I do as a radio host, when organisations approach me, can I do an interview with them? Part of that really hard initial conversation I have with them is that, okay, you're an organisation and there's something there for people with a disability. One of my first questions to them is that, how many people with a disability are on your board of management?
Or your
the committee of management? How many people with a disability are within the organisation? Are people with a disability part of this, or is it something else, or do they have another agenda? And that's a very challenging conversation for quite a few number of organisations.
It's a massive issue. And unfortunately, I think if that conversation was generated across London and UK, other than if it was a disability organisation that was led by a disabled person, I would imagine there would be very few individuals on their board or in management roles. There are some shifts, but very few. And as you know, we've just had a major election in UK. And unfortunately, the party that was successful didn't have a mandate for disability as part of their agenda. So they have certainly alienated an awful lot of disabled people throughout UK as part of moving forward. I mean, the successful party. And so there is an awful lot of work that I believe needs to be done over the next few years to try and make sure that we can regain that mileage and make sure that disability issues are part of the agenda, because these are very challenging times for disabled people.
Yep, well, listen, my name's Rafael Caleb, and I'm currently talking with Rachel Gadsden, an international artist based in England. Now, the big picture about where disability and the engagement within the community, like in Australia, which is a lot smaller than England as far as population goes, that in November there is the Office for Disability. Well, that's now part of, I think it's Roads, Infrastructure and Arts. It's being swallowed up by a completely different portfolio. And
I did see that. It was transferred very quickly across all the different social networks, I think, on the morning that it was announced. And my goodness me, everybody in UK held their breaths when they saw it, especially the disability sectors. I mean, we just couldn't believe it. And the art sectors. What? Roads? What's it got to do with roads? Incredible. Incredible, really.
Pardon, please, Rachel. Is it my headphones just came off there? Is that it was about roads and what arts and roads got to do with it, and with the being arts being part of roads and infrastructure, maybe along the lines of art is now going to be part of the mainstream community where everybody gets the same voice. But I really do think it signals that an intent of the federal Liberal government to really reduce and slash funding for arts programs within Australia.
I think so. I think it's I think it very much is going to be the case, because unfortunately the population are more interested in whether their roads operate properly than whether disabled people are given the support they need to just be human. And I think by sort of bringing these different categories in under one umbrella, it is going to be the fact that disability will be sidelined, issues around art and disability will be sidelined. It's just how it is. And I think the only thing that as artists we can do and practitioners that we can do is just make sure that these issues become part of artists' agenda, and they have, whenever they have the opportunity to speak up about these issues, that they are mentioned, because eventually somebody may listen. But I think it's very worrying times. I think it's difficult times as far as art and disability are concerned. They're not on the top of people's lists at the moment.
Well, is that with hosting the radio show Back with the Barologist, which is a series about leadership, arts and disability, is that I have referenced that the federal government has taken away the arts, made a decision to take away the arts portfolio. Rafael Caleb's response was, we are going to have a summit on leadership, arts and disability and start the discussion at that level and send the podcast to the federal politicians and see what they have to say and see what happens.
That's the best thing to do. It's all you can do. And actually, I think that quite often art can give you a bigger platform, because often politicians and governments sort of think it's a soft touch. So quite often you'll get an audience where you might always get an audience if they were really scared about what was going to be said. But I think the arts does give us an opportunity to actually dig in very deep, maybe under the umbrella of art, but also bringing forward policies and issues that are absolutely vital for our human survival. Creativity is part of human survival.
Well, is it Winston Churchill, I think, when during World War II, was quoted when he said that, why don't we reduce funding to the arts? And I think his response was, then in what case are we actually fighting for?
Exactly. And I mean, in the UK, we know that the arts generates a huge amount of income for the economy. So I think that it would be very difficult for them to say that actually it doesn't matter at all. But it is. These are very worrying times. And I know when I go and work in conflict regions, the difference that any form of creativity has for people who have suffered greatly through war and through very difficult economic environments, that just the opportunity to create can actually make a huge difference to an individual's life. So I think it's vital, even under very challenged economic circumstances, that we do really fight to make sure that this is part of our existence. Because what is the point otherwise? Why do we exist?
Now, is that, Rachel, part of your arts practice that has taken you to any number of countries around the world? I think Syria was one of them, working with refugees. I think Palestine, I think it was around the Middle East, out to Australia. Let's talk about your art, how governments have actually engaged with you and the role on trying to have Rachel Gadsden's art appealing.
I think it's always difficult to know why your art might become part of a general conversation. My work's always dealt with issues around human survival. I live with a very severe lung and heart condition, and I've had this all of my life. And so it's made me very aware of just the nature of surviving. I've been resuscitated many, many times. And so I'm aware of how fragile my own personal existence is. And although I don't make work about my own personal existence, there's absolutely no doubt, if anybody sees my work, that there's a sense of human fragility and a sense of survival. And I suppose because of this, I've reached out to communities who I believe should have a voice and should also have the opportunity to be able to be heard by their individual societies. So with any of the projects that I develop, it's always part of my remit with the commissioners or funders that I can also go and work with individuals who may have never had the opportunity to create art, but I believe have something creative to say as well. So I suppose I like to think that I deal with some universal issues, that they can be accessed really by anyone, because it's about our own personal fragilities and sense of survival and hope, and that what we all individually want is to live in a peaceful world where we can survive. And maybe that has meant that it's been interesting for governments. I have been really lucky to speak to many politicians around the world. Sometimes that amazes me, but I do think that art has that opportunity to be able to speak out to people, maybe in a way that is less threatening than if I was a politician and asked to have a similar conversation with a politician. So I know it's a very powerful means. It's the only means I have to have a voice, but I want it to be an inclusive voice. And so I don't judge the people I work with in any way. And I work with really anybody, whether they're an artist or whether they're a Syrian Iraqi refugee or whether they're someone in Hong Kong who is currently trying to have a voice within their own society.
Right. That's a really great answer about collaboration, finding a way to use a person's artwork to collaborate with others, give others a voice, to make a difference, to work towards that better idealistic world so that everyone does benefit. So the disability community is really leading the way to the mainstream community on how to engage with others.
I hope so. And I think that if anybody's honest with themselves, that it is purely by luck that we survive. It's purely by luck that we happen to exist in whatever environment we do. And for the toss of a coin, you or I could be in a conflict situation, or we might live in a country where there's relative peace. But wherever we do live, there are challenges. There's huge challenges in Australia at the moment. We've been watching the news and the high temperatures and the fires that have been sweeping across the whole of your nation. And for anybody, there are challenges. And it's not that I'm interested just in challenging situations and challenging narratives, but I suppose I do believe it's out of these conversations that we can have some very serious narratives, and we can possibly really understand what are the fundamental things that matter as far as our survival and existence is concerned.
Now, Rachel, a couple of two very quick questions. The first one is, have you got 30 seconds of advice for artists in general regarding their art practice?
Yes. Work very, very hard. Often people say to me, well, you know, artists are dreamers. I haven't yet met a successful artist who hasn't actually earned every single minute of their success. It's a very competitive environment, so you need to really put the hours in to develop your skills, to develop your knowledge, and to understand the landscape that you operate in. And secondly, you actually have to be very skilled. So also take the time to make sure that you learn your skill, that you understand your practice. And probably I've got three things. Look outwards. Don't just stand in your studio and make your work. Go out there and find out what's going on everywhere, because that's how really important work happens.
Right. Well, thank you very much for your time, Rachel. And before you go, now, what's the name of your website?
It's www.rachelgadsden.com.
Okay, well, thank you very much for your time, mate, Rachel. Is it? We have managed to make this happen with a 12-hour time difference. Thank you very much for making the time to talk with 3CR, with Back with the Barrel, just a summer series on leadership, art and disability. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. It's been brilliant. I've really loved connecting with you again.
Okay.
Speak soon.
Okay. Thank you very much, Rachel. And I hope that maybe we can connect one day across overseas. Thank you very much for your time.
Brilliant. See you soon.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thanks. Thank you very much. I've been talking with Carolyn Bodie, CEO of Arts Access Victoria, followed by Rachel Gadsting, an international artist. We're going to go out with a song by Melody Shorte called Happiness is the Expense of Euphoria from her new CD called Cower Between the Legs. See you on the 9th of January 2020. Keep listening to 3CR.
I said I live in a mirage, floating through time. Happiness is the expense of euphoria. Happiness is the expense of euphoria. I said I'm going through time. I lay with you again.